This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show on this first Saturday of August, 2024. Here we are with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie?
Very nice to hear your voice again, Dean. Did you have a good Saturday off last weekend?
I did. I always feel a void, and I mean that very sincerely. I enjoy doing the show a lot, and so I always feel, I feel like there's something missing in my Saturday morning. However, yes, we had relatives on my wife's side who were visiting from Mexico, so we made sure that we got to the cottage, to their family cottage, and had a visit, so it was great, yeah.
Nice break. And of course, the weather has been very conducive for anybody who can get out of Dodge and go to a cottage.
Indeed.
So it's just, the heat values have been pretty extreme and humidity has been pretty extreme for what we're used to anyway.
Yeah. And how does that fare with gardens these days, Charlie?
Well, that's the thing about humidity. I mean, the heat isn't really a problem, except that it slows down the growth of plants when it's really hot. But interestingly, of course, the heat speeds up the growth of insects. So insects respond very favorably to temperature. So with the heat values being what they are, a lot of people are seeing some pretty extreme, I don't want to say explosions of insects or insect pests, but we certainly are seeing, like those of you with boxwood, and we've talked about boxwood in the last 6 weeks or so, remember the way the life cycle works, more are being born as we speak of those little tiny caterpillars. So if you've got boxwood, it wasn't just scout for a week back in June. It's keep scouting every day, particularly right now because of the heat.
Right. I have to tell you, when Gail and I take our morning walk, there's one house on a corner, and they have recently, in the last couple of months or month, they have planted a whole row, probably about 25 boxwood. And I just kind of cringe every time I go by. I go, oh, my goodness. It's such a risk, I would think. It would be.
Yeah, they're going to regret that.
Yeah.
I
was going to ask, I would think that things like tomatoes would really benefit from this type of weather.
Sure, because they are a hot temperature plant. Any of the eggplant series, the tomato series that we think of as tomato series family, tomatoes, eggplants, peppers, loving the heat. But, just remember, we've got to keep all our vegetables consistently moist, but make sure or do your best to not let the plants actually be wet as the sun goes down. Because with the humidity, there's not that evaporation of moisture. So we are having, standing water. We're ending up with lots of mosquitoes. And of course, we are also ending up with fungal diseases.
Yikes. Okay, lots of things to consider. Let's consider the phone numbers, because we would love for you to call in if you have an indoor gardening question or an outdoor gardening question. 416-360-0740. That's the Toronto number. Or if you live anywhere outside Toronto, but within the province of Ontario, here's a 1-800 number you can use. 1-866-740-4740. Okay, and please let Ashy know, our producer Ashy, if you are a first-time caller, because why? Well, I'll give you the garden wings, and we love to do that. And we also love if you call often. We love if you call early, and I can see that we already have one caller who's called through and on the line there. That's good. So, yeah, call often, call early, and an important one question per call, please, and that's so we can get everybody in. We want to make sure that everybody gets a shot, okay? So, Charlie, I think we actually have to take our first break, but we will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. And Charlie, do you have a quick announcement you want
to? Yeah. Well, I just don't mean to interrupt, but you and I were speaking briefly there about the Olympics and how they've just been super amazing for so many of us from the opening ceremonies right on. Did you know that the equestrian events in France are taking place at Versailles? And so for the competitors, who are, of course, are from all over the world, this is just, they are over the moon, because not only are they competing in the Olympics in equestrian riding, but they're doing it in the gardens of Versailles. So they've done these pop-up stables, pop-up grandstands, crazy jumps, like the horses are jumping through fountains, through stag horns, because of course hunting was what Versailles was all about originally. And it's, and they've done apparently an amazing job on the course, and the crowds have turned out in vast numbers, and it's just like it sort of swelled my heart to think how smart were the French, you know, organizers of the Olympics to say, you know, obviously we've got surfing in the Olympics this year, so we'll go to French Polynesia to do that because there's no waves in Paris. Right. But for the equestrian events, forget building a ring. Let's just go out to the hunting lodge in Versailles.
And have you been there?
No, it's on my bucket list.
Your list? Yeah. Well, I would venture to say that that might be one of the Olympic competitions that you would be most sort of keen to watch, I would imagine.
Actually, I had a friend who was not in the Olympics, but she was an equestrian rider. So I do find it pretty fascinating, you know, what they go through and the details and the rules of it all. But I thought it was great. Some of the comments from some of the competitors, they were just so, so happy.
Wow. Well, we've got a whole bunch of people not lined up to compete, but they want to talk to you because they have some questions. And so why don't we go to our first caller? We have Judy calling from Brighton. Welcome to The Garden Show, Judy.
Hi. Hi. The phone lines are great. I'm having a hard time hearing you guys, so I'm just going to
ask. Well, we can hear you just wonderfully. You sound great.
So ask your question and then hang up and you can listen.
Yes, then I'm going to hang up and listen to you on the radio because that's clear. I have a mock orange that's not doing very well. I have two of them, and they're about, 15 feet apart. One's doing beautifully. The other one looks like it's dying on me. I want to know if I can prune it back, when to prune it back, and how short to prune it back, and I'll hang up now. Thanks a lot, guys. Enjoy your day.
Thank you, Judy. Yeah. All right. Well, I would have asked Judy a couple of questions. One is how much sun these plants are in. Mock orange, Dean, you probably know this plant because it gets little white flowers that are incredibly fragrant.
Yes.
So often people think of jasmine when they smell mock orange. And they also come with some different renditions of leaves. The traditional, of course, is green leaves. And then there's golden mock orange, which is quite pretty and often used just because it's got, you know, bright, colorful leaves, even when it's not flowering. Because it's not a long flowering period with mock orange. It's kind of late spring, early summer. So number one, what does it need? It needs lots of sun, full sun to partial shade. So that means minimum of 4 hours direct sunlight every single day, up to more than 4 hours, but minimum 4 hours, moist, well-drained soil. So not wet, not swampy, but not a desert either. Mock orange does need that moisture. So make sure you've got an organic-based soil. It's going to hold moisture. So adding, of course, homemade compost or any organic material will help with moisture retention in the soil around the plant. And I think it might be competition from other plants that's going on there. Mock orange is a pretty easy plant to grow. Now, it is possible that with the humidity, Judy is seeing some black speckles on the leaves. And again, that's just going to be a superficial fungal disease, not going to kill the plant, but superficial. And the other thing, remember, is if you have dead wood on any plants, cut when you see the dead wood, as long as it's not raining. So, you know, she asked about pruning. Yep, I would prune. I, of course, always prune right after flowering. So if you haven't pruned those plants at all, prune them. In the heat, nothing too dramatic. I'd probably wait till later in the summer till it cools off a bit. But the one more thing, though, it's a perfect timing to mention this, is fertilizer. When we fertilize our plants, we encourage growth. It is August 3rd, though. So do we want to encourage a lot of growth on our plants, whatever the plants are, whether it's mock orange or, you know, pine trees, in August and September? Or do we want to let them naturally start slowing down because the days are naturally getting shorter? Definitely keep fertilizing your tomatoes and eggplants and petunias and zinnias. Even your lawn will fertilize later in the fall. But the perennial plants, the shrubs, the trees, we should be done fertilizing those. So if you haven't fertilized, wait till next spring, because July 31st is my magical date. No more fertilizer.
Okie dokie. Okay, you know what we're going to do? We're going to take a quick break. I'm going to give you the numbers one more time. 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. And we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yes, we are back here on The Garden Show on this 3rd of August, and wishing everybody a happy Saturday. It is, we're in the midst of growing, blooming, everything season, right, Charlie?
We are, assuming we're keeping the watering and the fertilizing and everything, you know, the soil in good condition.
You got it. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Diane on the line from Dorchester. Welcome to The Garden Show, Diane.
Good morning, Charlie and Dean. Every time I come into the office and close the door and it's on a Saturday, my husband just shrugs his shoulders. Oh, no, more work for me when I'm asking you a question. Anyway, we've lived in our place now for 24 years, and we've slowly over those years established our flowers and lots of different types of flowers. We have hostas, and we have catmint, and lavender, and of course our coral bells. But I've always been putting the mulch on it every year, but now I stopped doing it about 4 years ago. We were on a windy corner, and lots of times it blows away. So my dilemma is, right now I removed, starting last fall, a bunch of the mulch. And this spring, I removed 3/4 of the mulch, and then I went to my back flower bed within the north fence, took it all out. All it had turned to be is wood chips, and I have never fertilized my plants, so I wondered, I know it's a little early, but I like to plan ahead. Is it best, maybe in the beginning of September before the leaves fall, to put down some kind of compost, and then when the leaves start to fall, shred them and put them on top of the compost, or forget about the compost and just use the leaves?
Well, if, as you say, the mulch you removed was strictly just sort of dried up bark chips, that would indicate that there's not a lot of vigorous life in the soil below those chips. So I absolutely would recommend that some compost, whatever it is, whether it's composted manure, homemade compost, something, you know, some amendment for your soil that's high in organic material should go down first. Early September is probably fine. Anytime in September or October is fine to good. Put down a good minimum half inch, maybe even more, up to an inch of quality, you know, organic material onto the surface of the soil. You don't need to mix it. You don't need to till it. Just lay it down on the surface. Then you're right. When the leaves are falling, using your lawnmower or some way of chipping those leaves up small, because you don't want to put big maple leaves on your straight on the garden. You want small chunks of leaves, and you want a depth of 2 to 4 inches of chopped up leaves going on the surface of the soil before winter. And that will have huge, like, positive impact for your garden beds, but it's not a one-shot deal. You got to do that every single year with those fall leaves.
Okay, but how often do I put this compost down?
And, Same thing every year.
It'll slowly break down. And which is better, cow or sheep?
Good question. And that's a sneaky second question, Diane, but I'll let you get away with it. They are virtually identical because they are both ruminants. Their digestive systems and what they eat is very, very similar. However, if you go right down into the nitty-gritty of what's going on with the chemistry of the manure that comes out of the cow or the sheep, sheep manure is considered slightly more nutritious than cattle.
Oh, that's wonderful to know. I so appreciate, and I hope that my questions have helped some of your listeners, because I just found the mulch, first of all, I'm getting up in age, and it's really hard to keep doing it, hauling bags of it or having somebody bring a huge container, you know, in a trailer, and then we got to spread it. And I still want to do it myself without paying someone to do it. So, pardon me, but I want my gardens to look good, too. So they've probably been crying for a nutrition for a long time. So thank you, and have a very good long weekend. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Diane. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks so much, Diane.
Yeah, you know what? I will just say, Dean, between you and I, maybe Diane is still listening. particularly on a windy corner that Diane mentioned she's living on, I would, after she's done all this organic material and leaves this fall, I would put the mulch on next spring, because mulch holds the moisture when the wind is blowing. It also, she said the mulch blows away. Well, guess what? Without mulch, what blows away? All that beautiful organic material she's just added, the soil. That I've experienced that here at my garden, which is a bit of a wind tunnel. So the mulch, it looks good, it smells good, and it does hold the soil and the moisture in the gardens.
Indeed. But, you know, Diane brings up a very, very good point, which we have seen in our, right across the street from us, on twice now. We had a couple that was very, very dear to us that moved in around the same time that we did 14 years ago. And then about 5 years ago, they had to sell because the gardens that they created became so taxing that they couldn't look after them anymore. And so they moved. Now, the next person who currently lives there, she also has continued to downsize what she inherited because, again, she's becoming older and she says, it's just too much work for me. So I think that's something that we have to be careful. You know, Gail and I have even been thinking about it. How do we maybe sort of rethink our gardens as we are becoming older so that our gardens don't become overwhelming to us when we get older?
That's right. And yeah, you have to sort of sit back and say, where do I put the bulk of my time? Like if it's, and do I enjoy doing that? And will I be able to keep doing that? I know people that have fallen in love with massive perennial gardens and put together gorgeous, you know, drifts of color.
Yes.
20 years later are going, oh my goodness, I got to get rid of some of these perennials. You know, some are taking over from others. They're high maintenance in terms of all the trimming I have to do, the weeding, et cetera. So even here, like I emphasized a lot of shrubbery in my gardens as I planted them here in my current home.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, it makes sense. It is certainly, you know, again, Diane's point well taken.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go to our next caller. We have Barry on the line from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Barry.
Oh, good morning, Dean and Charlie. Simple question, I think. I bought two small containers for cat grass. One of them I transferred to a much bigger pot, and I put some potting soil in it. And the grass there is growing twice as fast, and it looks much healthier. The only question I have is potting soil, dangerous for a cat?
Good question. Shouldn't be.
Okay.
If it's a quality potting mix, it's going to be built with some components that are very consistent. Peat moss being one. The white little chunky bits are called perlite. The kind of shiny little bits are called vermiculite. And sometimes there'll be a little bit of sand in there. And generally speaking, none of it is poisonous. I mean, none of it is nutritional either. But I think you'll find your cat will chew on the green bits of the grass. And if your cat's like my cat, pull the grass right out of the pot and then kind of scatter soil everywhere, make a big mess.
Well,
and maybe ingest a bit, but not a lot.
Well, that's good because she's, well, after all, he's got 9 lives, so.
Sure. There's always that.
And the potting soil I have comes in the small bag, so I don't think there's nothing there will probably kill them, especially with nine lives. But no, thank you for the information. No. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so
there's
much,
nothing
Barry.
Poison. Should be nothing poisonous in potting mix, trust me.
Nice. Okay. We've got another caller on the line. We're going just south of my town. Yeah,
Your neighbor, right?
My neighbor, yeah. We're going to Stainer. Yeah, we've got Lorraine on the line. Welcome to the Garden Show, Lorraine.
Thank you. I bought a cherry tomato plant, and I didn't realize that it sit on it. It's midnight snack. They were nice and green when I started. Now they're shiny black like marbles. The picture shows they turn red, and I've had two now that's kind of pinky red on the bottom. The rest is black. But I want to know, do they turn totally red before I eat them?
Great question. No. Well, when they're ripe, they will be such a deep, dark red, they'll be almost look like a plum color, like a dark purple.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Because the tag says like shows them bright red, but I tried one when it was black and it was really bitter. And so now I have a couple that's kind of pinky, but I didn't know if they would be totally red. And so.
They should transition to a number of colors. And the amount of sun they're in will have impact on the final color. But you'll know they're ripe. It's always, we're at that time where people have all these specialty tomatoes, right? Black ones, orange ones, green tomatoes that are ripe when they're green. So how do you know when these little tomatoes are ripe? Just twiddle it with your fingers, like twiddle the bottom of the actual little tomato. And if it falls off the vine very easily, you want it to be firm. You don't want it to be soft and mushy. So it's a firm tomato, but it falls off the vine into your hand after you kind of tickle the bottom of the tomato, you'll know it's ripe.
Okay, even though it still might have some black.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Don't worry. The colors are all kind of all novelty. There's super fun colors out there. I shouldn't say novelty. It's just we went to the land of orange carrots and red tomatoes hundreds of years ago, and everybody thinks that's the natural color, but there's lots and lots of colors out there.
Oh, okay. My plant is loaded with tomatoes. I've never had so many cherry tomatoes, and now when they're black, but that's good. Thank you.
Sweet. Okay, yeah. Well, it's been a great tomato year. That's for sure.
Thanks for the call there, Lorraine. Our number is, incidentally, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. Charlie, quick email you got from Dory. Dorothy was asking about orchids. Her question is pretty straightforward. When all the flowers fall off the orchids, should I cut back the stem that the orchids were on, or should I just leave them alone?
All right. So thank you for the email, Dorothy. When all the flowers have fallen off your orchids, you're going to still have a green stem. I, at first, years ago, thought, well, deadhead, flowers are gone, take off the stem. I have since learned that you should leave that stem alone. It is possible, not necessarily going to happen, but it is possible that more flowers, believe it or not, will grow off of that green stem. So let it do its natural thing. If it just naturally dies down, once it's brown to the bottom, cut it off. But let it die down first.
Okie dokie. Okay, love our orchids. Indeed. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Merle on the line from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Merle.
Hi. Hey. I had called before about my hydrangeas, which were fabulous and large and flopped over, and I wondered what to do about them. But since that time, my garden has been ripped out because I had to have my basement waterproofed after that last flood. Mm-hmm. So now I have a clean slate. And I would still like hydrangeas, but I don't want the kind that are Annabelle that flop over, even though they're gorgeous. And I'm just thinking, would a hydrangea shrub be something good? I'm thinking of maybe putting two in. It's a 4x9 space, and there's some kind of yew evergreen there of about 5 feet to the on one side. And so I'm thinking of that again. So it's very sunny, east facing, probably 6 to 8 hours of sun a day.
Oh, okay. That's a lot of sun for an east facing. Yeah. So you're absolutely right. When you're thinking about hydrangeas, it does come down to sun. The Annabelles that you have gotten rid of are hydrangeas that handle less light than many others. So there's two groups of hydrangeas. One are the round flowers, like the Annabelles. So we mop head hydrangeas is one term. So round flowers, big leaves, and typically, well, they can be pink, they can be white, and if you're lucky, you can get some purples and blues going with the mop head or the round hydrangeas that handle partial light. But if you don't want any flopping, you want nice, clean, tidy, but beautiful flowering shrubs, and you've got a minimum of 6 hours of sun, then I would go with the paniculata hydrangeas. So paniculatas are commonly known as the PG hydrangeas. So instead of a round flower, they have a conical flower, so almost a like a pointy tip on it. I'm looking out my window right here in front of my office, and I'm just trying to see what cultivar I put in there because I do love them. There's so many great ones now. So think of hydrangea paniculata, and then from there, you've got multi choices. Depends on the height you want these plants to go. So yeah, anywhere from kind of a 150 centimeters tall up to much taller than that. Like the Limelight is a very, very tall, I have that one as well, hydrangea, up, it'll go up to 200 centimeters or more. And yeah, so, and then some of them are now are all about the pinks, though. They do all these crazy, there's one called Quickfire, if you want to Google what that looks like. Very popular plant, very easy to grow, but again, good sized plant, 175 centimeters tall. So, you know, it is going to just kind of come down to height, width, and whether you want just white or you want lime green or you want white and pink or what you want. But just Google hydrangea paniculata and see what grabs you and then see what's available. You may not be able to purchase anything of what you're looking for until next spring. But then again, the garden centers will be full of paniculata hydrangeas now because they're blooming now.
Okay, great. All right. Thank you very much. Okay. I appreciate this. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay, okay. Yeah, thanks very much for the call there, Merle. You know what? Let's jump into our next break, Charlie, and we'll come back. We've got callers on the line. Okay, we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio. And yeah, Dean with Charlie Dobbin. Charlie can answer any question.
Or she'll just make it up.
She'll make it up. Ask her anything. Doesn't even be about gardening. Ask her about
ask me about wine tasting. No, I'm kidding.
How long have you been doing the show now, Charlie? How many years?
I think it's 16 years now.
Yeah.
Might be 17. Either way, it's a long time.
Yeah. I can't even imagine the questions that you have had come across the board.
Someday I am going to collate all my questions because believe it or not, from the very first show, even prior to this station, I was on CHML in Hamilton for a couple of years. I have kept big notebooks of everybody who's ever called and what they called about.
Wow. And you know who's going to love those? Your kids when you pass. They're going to love looking through those books.
I don't know about that. I was going to say, the callers would probably like it. They're like, really? You wrote me down?
Yeah, we could just keep the show going when you decide you don't want it. If you ever want to take a weekend off, just give me all the books and I'll just rifle through.
Well, I don't have the answers in the book. I just have questions. Yes, sorry.
That's not going to work very well. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Michael on the line from Etobicoke. Welcome to The Garden Show, Michael.
Good morning. Nice to get in touch with you today. I have an unusual question, I think. It's about a ginkgo tree. Very, very vigorous, very, very healthy, and it's probably 35 years old. And what's happening this season is the smallest sized leaves are yellowing and falling prematurely. And every morning I go out and I have to, like, rake them up. It's an extremely healthy, vigorous tree. It's absolutely beautiful. But this annoying leaf drop, and they're, like, lemon yellow, like they would be in the fall, but they're dropping every day, and it started about 3 weeks ago.
Okay, so what has happened around that tree in the last 2 years? Has there been any construction? people parking cars underneath it? You know what I'm saying? Like, has there been anything flooding?
It's kind of mid-healthy, sloped, southwest-facing lawn. And it's quite far from the house and the road. It's kind of in a very, very generously provided position.
Great. That's great. And does the grass, the lawn, grow right up to the trunk?
I beg your pardon?
Does the lawn or grass grow right up to the trunk of the tree?
Yes, it does.
Okay. So it just stands alone in the lawn?
That's right. Away from any other vegetation. Yes.
But what's dropping are the tips, the small leaves you mentioned, but are they the tips or are they from inside the tree?
But the leaf size, it would be, that's why I'm saying, it would tend to be what you would have to call very, very small leaves.
But where are they based in the tree?
Mm-hmm. From all over. But the tree is extremely vigorous, so I don't see any particular source. It's like here, there, and everywhere. But it's not denuding the tree because the tree is so vigorous, it doesn't. Yeah. This drop is not making much of a difference. You understand what I mean?
Yeah. No, I get it. So bottom line, ginkgos are very tough, very hardy, vigorous trees. And, of course, you're seeing that when you say it looks great and it looks so healthy.
Yes.
The fact that it is dropping some small leaves, the only reason I'd ever be concerned about premature leaf drop, which is what you're experiencing, I mean, it's only August 3rd, but when we do have premature leaf drop, if it's the older, more mature leaves, so typically from the inside of the tree, then we just say, oh, you know what? This tree is stressed. Maybe in your case, the tree has so many leaves, the heat levels are so high, the moisture levels can't sustain all those leaves, and the tree very naturally sheds excess leaves, but is still remaining healthy, photosynthesizing, growing, doing the right thing.
Yes.
It's when the tips, the newest growing tips, start to shrivel or start to drop that I worry with trees. So in your case, I wouldn't be at all concerned. I would just say, you know what? I've got a sugar maple out front and I'm starting to get some orange leaves on my sugar maple right now. And I know that's because that tree has just not, it's starting to say, okay, enough. I can't deal. I need more water. I need less heat. Everybody leave me alone. I'm dropping some leaves.
Right. So, okay, well, that could be it because I can't emphasize enough how vigorous and beautiful tree looks. Like, it really does. And again, well, that might be it. Like, but a tip, dieback, or the yellowing there, no, that is, it's just at random throughout.
Okay. And the one thing is I would try and always avoid having lawn grow right up to the trunks of your tree. So if you can cut out some of that grass, and then you replace with some fresh triple mix or topsoil, even if it's only, you know, a circle 3 feet around, just getting some of that grass away from the trunk, it makes it easier when you're trimming your lawn.
Yeah.
And it also allows a better air circulation for the roots of the plants.
That's good to know. Okay, because the lawn does grow right up to it. It does, but I'm careful with trimming of the trunk and so on. But that's a helpful suggestion. But I won't worry about it. It sounds like it is okay.
Yeah.
The vigor.
Yeah, it's fine. And it sounds lovely. It sounds like you put it in a great spot, too.
It is. It looks great. It's beautiful. Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Have a great week.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much, Michael. I love ginkgo trees. They're great. The leaves are just beautiful.
Which reminds me of hanging on the wall behind me here in my office.
Oh, yeah.
You mounted a dried ginkgo in glass and then gave it to me as a gift. It's very pretty.
I did. Well, I just, you know what? It seemed apropos. And it's a pieces that I made over the years in my stained glass. Love pressing leaves in between glass.
Yeah, it's very pretty. And I too have a ginkgo out in my backyard.
Excellent. Excellent. I love them. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have time to squeeze one in before our next break. Let's go to Sandra from Etobicoke. Welcome to the Garden Show, Sandra.
Good morning, Charlie and Dean. Listening to your show probably from the start. I have a climbing hydrangea, probably 30 years old, and it grows along the wall of my neighbor's garage. One branch made its way through the eaves trough towards his roof, and because I'd hurt my back, he offered to cut it off for me. He didn't cut that branch. He cut three of the big branches facing into my garden. I now have a large hole in the middle of the climbing hydrangea, but But the worrying part is that two or three branches have dead-looking leaves on them. They are still attached to a different piece of the trunk of the climbing hydrangea. I scratched back a bit of the bark. It does look green. Is it just a major, major shock?
Yes, yes. Any major pruning in the heat of July can actually kill big plants. So that's why we don't do a lot of major pruning in the heat of July, just because it is so shocking. I, for now, probably would. So do you think your neighbor hates that vine? Is that why he totally messed it up?
He was just worried about it growing between the eaves trough and on his roof. It was a small piece. I mean, I got up on a 6-foot ladder and I cut it off with regular secateurs. So we're not talking something that was massive. I don't think the guy knows what he's doing.
Clearly.
And he cut off like three. You can see that they were quite big branches, probably half inch circumference. And, you know, I can see where he cut them, and they were just facing inwards into my garden, nothing to do with the one that was growing upwards.
I wonder if secretly he's trying to kill the plant, is what I'm wondering.
Well, I know, that's my feeling.
I once had a neighbor kill silver lace vine that I had growing on the fence between our properties because he was having bad dreams that it was going to come and strangle him in his sleep and grow right through his window. So he started pruning it in the heat of July, and big surprise, it died. And I was like, oh my God, people with their imaginations. So I'm not sure what your neighbor was thinking, but for now, you know what, Sandra, I would... Don't do any more pruning to this plant. Let it be, you know, keep it tidy and clean. Obviously, if leaves are falling early, just do a bit of cleanup and wait and see what happens next spring. When the new green buds start to show up next April or March or May, whenever you start to see them, then you'll be in a position to do some pruning to encourage to get the sideways growth, right? You don't want the hydrangea coming out into your yard or obviously onto his roof. So you want all the side branches to be left and the forward growing or backward growing branches to be removed. But do that next spring. And for now, I would probably just leave it alone.
Okay. I wondered if I should tie some ribbon or some Velcro tape on the branches that look like they're dead now so I know which ones they are in the spring.
I think you'll know. If they're dead, they'll be dead. There'll be no green buds showing on them versus they'll be alive, and then it's just a question of pruning for the right shape.
Right, because I'm going to have to try and fill in this hole that he's created. Mm.
Well, with the dead, unless something's clearly dead now, I wouldn't remove it. Like now you can remove deadwood, but only deadwood. So if you're not sure, I'd leave it alone and see next spring what grows.
I'm going to leave it. I did give it its last fertilizing. You know, all of the plants got their fertilizing, so it did get some fertilizer.
Okay. Yep. So that's it. No more fertilizer. Yeah. Just let it be. Talk to it. Explain that the neighbor is a bozo.
Okay. We got to run. We got to go to commercial. Thanks for the call there, Sandra.
Thanks. Good luck, Sandra.
I was going to suggest to Sandra that she send him a thank you gift, one of those Japanese beetle traps he can put on his property.
Well, but you had an experience too, Dean, where a neighbor went to town on a cedar hedge.
Oh, yeah. I'll send you a picture someday. Looks like a big pile of twigs. I'll give you an update after. Okay, we're going to take our last break. We'll be back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yeah, we're back here for our last bit of The Garden Show on this first Saturday of August. And let's go right now to our next caller, Wanda, who's calling from North York. Welcome to The Garden Show, Wanda.
Hi there, good morning. Last year, a couple of my carrot plants went to seed. I collected, it's the first time it's ever happened. I collected the seeds and I seeded them this year. All the plants... I got lots of carrots, but they're all going to seed. How do I prevent plants from going to seed? And I've had the same problem with turnips and a little bit with beets.
Huh. Okay. So that's a good question. So when plants go to seed early, we call it bolting, right? Well, but carrots going to seed is weird. I've never had carrots go to seed. let's see, going to seed first year. See, carrots are a biennial. Okay, so the reason they're going to seed is because they have, it's a second year for the carrots. So your carrots are probably planted in a very protected spot, maybe?
In place as usual, yes, it is protected.
So if you do not harvest your carrots when they have the long orange taproot and green leaves, and you just leave them in the ground, and the next year spring arrives and the green leaves grow up again, the roots are still there, but the roots start to shrivel as the flowers start to form on the green leaves of the carrots. Parsley is exactly the same. We grow parsley usually for the leaves, but as soon as they go to flower, which is in their second year, we get fewer leaves. So what I would do is, personally, I pull out all those, if you've got carrots attached to those green leaves where the seeds are starting to form, pull them all. Just pull them all out. Don't save the seeds, or if you're going to save the seeds, hold on to the seeds to plant next spring.
Okay, but I got seeds last year and I planted them mm-hmm. this spring.
Mm-hmm.
And all the plants.
But obviously some of the plants from last year still survived and are still in your garden.
No. Right. These are seeds that mm-hmm. I actually picked up last year. I actually picked mm-hmm. them up, threw them in a paper bag, and this spring I just seeded them. I just tossed them. I didn't know whether they were good or not. I just tossed them. Everything mm-hmm. came up, but everything's going to seed.
Okay, so it is also possible that the seeds you scattered this spring
mm-hmm.
grew right away. Carrots are not usually that fast to germinate, but, you know, it takes them about 2 weeks to germinate. So they germinated shortly, you know, a couple weeks after you scattered them. And then some inclement weather happened, whether it was extreme warmth, extreme cold, extreme dry, extreme wet. And the plant all those same little carrots thought that was winter. And then now they think it's second year and they're going to seed. Like that does happen sometimes where plants, even though they aren't 2 years old, act like they're 2 years old.
Okay. So there's no way really preventing
them. I'm not sure.
Well, I've got a whole bunch that I'm just tossing out.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, so that, and like I said, why? So main thing is trying, when you're growing things like carrots, protect them from anything too inclement in the way of the environmental changes during the growing season. Like, you know, we're harvesting them by late fall, so we don't worry about them then. But you really don't want carrots to think it's second year when it's still only first year.
No, and I ran into the same problem with turnips. And the turnips, you know, those were seeds that I bought.
Right.
I had the same problem with them, too.
Unless it's something to do specifically with those carrot seeds that, for whatever reason, are flower early. So you don't want to regrow those seeds, I guess, would be the other thing. Maybe get a hold of some brand new carrot seeds that you think are going to be delicious for next year.
All carrots are good.
I agree. We're eating them quite happily here, I'll tell you. Yeah, good for you. Well, yeah, I wish I had a real definitive answer there, but I would start with some fresh seeds and make sure that it's a clean, there's no carrots growing when you before you plant the next set of carrots next year.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for the call there, Wanda. Well, and as you say, Charlie, I think we have almost run out of runway here. I think we've got about a minute left.
To the show. It's crazy.
Flew by.
It is. And that was a good question. I mean, anybody who's listening who's had that same issue with carrots going to seed, like flowering, in what appears to be their first year of growth, I would love to hear from you. So simple email. What is my email address? C.Dobbin.
Yep, c.dobbin@mzmedia.com. Okay, c.dobbin@mzmedia.com.
Right, thank you for that. And also, of course, you can always call into the Garden Show next Saturday because we will be here as usual. This afternoon, yep. I've got friends visiting from Montreal and some other friends coming in from Toronto, and we're off to do a little wine tasting and lobster roll indulging.
Nice.
So I've got a fun afternoon planned.
Yeah, I think we're going to take in some Shakespeare by the water, which also is sort of, we'll be sitting in the gardens or on the lawn anyway. So yeah, looking out into the water. Yeah.
Sweet. Have fun. Thanks
very
much.
You as well.
Thanks, Dean. Thanks, Ashi. Couldn't do any of this without Ashi or the great callers. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.